and a certain playing style, not the other way round. We don't want a coach that explains his concept to us. We want to formulate a concept and then find the right man for that, Heidel says. That became the way we did things until I left in 2016. And it all goes back to that first year with Wolfgang Frank and our first year of any success. We understood then that tactics could get us somewhere, even with the individually inferior players. It's like that at Mainz today. What's prudent for FSV, he adds, should also be right for more financially potent sides. You can't change a whole setup and team every time you change coach. You'll never find stability that way. He name-checks Hamburger SV, giants of the Bundesliga in the 70s and 80s, who've been stuck in a rut due to a lack of joined-up thinking. Like another restless, highly strung prophet before him, Frank was allowed only glimpses of the promised land. Impatience barred his admission too. But he was at least able to witness his people. His protege, Jürgen Klopp, and a host of other former players such as Joachim Lau, Torsten Liebenecht, Jürgen Cramny, Peter Neustadter, Christian Hock, Stefan Kühnert, Lars Schmidt, Sandro Schwartz, Sven Demant and Uwe Stöver helped bring German football tactics in from the wilderness as coaches. He would tell us, "When you've all become managers, please come back and tell me about your heroic deeds," Klopp said. On the day of the Champions League final in May 2013, the BVB coach sent his old friend a text message. "Without you, I wouldn't be here today, in London, at Wembley." Klopp also kept in touch with the Suns, inviting them to visit Dortmund's summer training camps at Bad Ragaz, Austria. Frank's most prominent apprentice, along with another Swabian tactics obsessive Ralf Rangnick, went on to establish the Flea's maverick blueprint of zonal marking, a back four and hard-pressing as the new orthodoxy in the Bundesliga in the mid to late noughties. But it took another few years before the scale of Frank's impact was more widely appreciated. "When great things happen, the rewards often come too late," Klopp said, a few days after Frank's death on the 7th of September 2013. He had been diagnosed with a malignant brain tumour only 4 months earlier. Frank had worked as an opposition scout for Mainz in the last year of his life. He'd looked after himself, been careful to eat well. Both the diagnosis and the speed with which the cancer took him came as a huge shock to everybody. 1 week before he had surgery, when it was already quite clear that he wouldn't live much longer, "He told me again that leaving Mainz had been the one grave mistake of his life," Heidel says. It was very hard to deal with his death. Maybe it was meant to be that he got sick, Sebastian wonders. His sons were with him until the end. Mainz 05 supporters honoured Frank with a tribute ahead of the Bundesliga game against Schalke 04 a few days after his death. "Mainz ist deins." "Mainz is yours," read the banner. Plenty of coaches win trophies, but only a few can make a club and a city their own. Fewer still leave behind a legacy that far outlasts their time on the bench. There is not a single person in football at Mainz who's not 100% convinced that everything started with Wolfgang Frank, Klopp said about his Lehrmeister, his teacher and role model. Klopp also made sure many former players came to pay their respects at the funeral at Mainz's main cemetery on the 19th of September. "Everyone showed up," says Martin Quast. Players from the clubs he coached, representatives from the German FA, from the Bundesliga, from the coaching academy. I get goosebumps thinking about it. Most people have no idea, but those who work in football, the insiders, they all know. They know that Wolfgang Frank didn't just have a huge hand in the development of football at Mainz, but on modern football. Fundamentally, he thought about things no one had ever thought about. "You're a Bundesliga coach, even if you didn't work there," Klopp said, holding back the tears. "I've told more than 1,000 players that Wolfgang influenced a whole generation of footballers and still continues to do so. He was the coach who has influenced me most. He was an extraordinary human being." Quast has known Klopp for 25 years, but Frank's funeral was the first time his friend was struggling for words. He spoke, of course, but he'll probably say that was his toughest job ever, giving a eulogy for his great mentor. "I got the sense that this wasn't just a farewell. Many turned up to pick up a spiritual message or to deliver one. It was more than a funeral. It was a recognition." It's through the work of Klopp, Frank's most studious disciple, that the pivotal importance of this introverted, complicated man in the renaissance of German football has since been more widely realized. There's no greater honor an apprentice can bestow on his master. Chapter 7. Schönen guten Tag. Hier ist Jürgen Klopp. Dortmund 2008 to 2010. Strangely enough, there's no German equivalent for sell the sizzle, not the sausage. But that's the classic marketing trick Borussia employed in June 2008, the month after Jürgen Klopp signed his contract. 6 weeks before any balls would be kicked, huge posters with Jürgen Klopp's head went up next to the B1, Schnellstrasse, that runs past the Signal in Duna Park and through the city's more genteel southern quarters. His face was the message, a promise. The new man in the driving seat would transform the sleeper carriage football, Tagesspiegel, from the past few seasons into a roaring, rumbling express train. Dortmund weren't stupid, says former press officer Josef Schneck, over a glass of mineral water in a business hotel a short walk from the BVB stadium. They used him to push the sale of season tickets, and they went through the roof. People were camping outside the club offices the night before. Süddeutsche Zeitung's Freddy Rockenhaus, one of two reporters who'd revealed the shocking levels of debt and financial mismanagement in the early noughties, compares the posters to election advertising. They might have said, vote Merkel, but they said, vote Klopp. People did. Dortmund had to cap sales at 49,300 to ensure that a few thousand day tickets were kept available for employees and fan clubs. From the outset, says Schneck, Klopp was happy to talk to anybody. He wanted to meet with the ultras, with the fan club representatives to get them on board. Jan-Henrik Grzeszki, one of the founding members of BVB Ultra Group, the Unity, remembers being distinctly underwhelmed by the club's choice of manager at the beginning. We thought Mainz, that la-la club, always in a good mood, not cool. Klopp was one of those faces of the 2006 World Cup, also not cool. And what had he done as a coach? Not a lot. We were worried he wouldn't be able to arrest the slide. The football was dull. There was no money. Aki Watzke had to get every transfer over €500,000 signed off. We were well on our way to becoming a nothing mid-table team. But Klopp? I don't think I've ever been so impressed with somebody in my life. We taught him how to play Schotten, a card game, and he talked to us. It was crystal clear that Klopp and his wife Ulla, who'd come with him, were 100% committed to Borussia. They wanted to know everything about the club and its people. He told us how excited he was to get going, and that we had a huge role to play as the 12th or 13th man, and that we had to develop this feeling of we. He had us from that moment on. No coach had ever done all of that. Schneck. When somebody in marketing told Klopp that a few corporate customers had given up their VIP seats, he said he would call them to see if they'd changed their mind. He went into the office, picked up the phone and said, Schönen guten Tag, hier ist Jürgen Klopp. I am the new coach of Borussia Dortmund. I've been told you want to cancel your tickets. Do you think you should reconsider? Some of them were so gobsmacked they said, okay, we'll think it over. He reeled them back in. Can you imagine any other coach doing that? That was Jürgen. He stole everybody's hearts. We've had successful coaches at Dortmund who were also class acts in their dealings with people before, says Fritz Lunchesmann, a bespectacled, cheerful, bear-like man in his early 60s, who's been looking after the first team's organisational needs as team manager since 1988. Ottmar Hitzfeld, Matthias Sammer, but Jürgen Klopp is unrivalled. He had the whole staff eating out of his hand by treating them seriously and valuing their efforts. Jürgen asked people how they felt, if they had any problems and so on. I remember I was wearing very colourful shirts at the time. Jürgen went up to me and said, hey, listen, are you always wearing such wallpaper? I said, well, I'll have to see if I've got anything else in my cupboard. And then I put those wallpaper shirts in the bin. I listened to his advice. You couldn't be upset with him. His freelance work as a personal stylist aside, Klopp used the summer break to immerse himself in the club's traditions and heritage. Lunchesmann, a walking lexicon, Schneck, explained to him the importance of the Drei Alfredos. The attacking trio of Alfred Adi Preisler, Alfred Kalbasa, and Alfred Naipiklo, who won back-to-back championships in the mid-1950s. He and Klopp immediately hit it off, Lunchesmann says. He is a guy always having fun, and I am of a positive disposition too. I had to coordinate the football schedule with him for the season, but there was another matter in those early weeks. Every year, our council of elders, made up of former players and long-standing members, have their summer party. I said to Jürgen, it would be good if you came. They all gathered in a restaurant in Vicada and were straightaway smitten with Jürgen. He sat down with everyone and talked to all these elderly gentlemen and their wives who didn't have a clue about football. But he made them feel appreciated and took their concerns seriously. He stayed much longer than he initially planned, a few hours, and left a lasting impression on that generation. They will all still say today, Jürgen was a one-off. Legendary players such as Aki Schmidt and Hoppy Kurat loved Klopp, Schneck adds. Other coaches treated these meetings like an unwelcome chore. Jürgen, on the other hand, acknowledged that the club wouldn't be there without them. His interest was genuine. He treasured the history. Klopp won over the club even when he lost, and lost badly. On a staff day years later, employees were put into mixed groups to compete in physical games and a quiz. Schneck, I was in a group with Jürgen, a groundsman and a woman from accounts. There was an egg and spoon race. You had to shoot on goal, that sort of thing. And there were questions about Dortmund's history. We were sure we were in the lead, but in fact, we came last. Everybody else was cheering. As losers, we had to wash the team bus. You could do these things with Jürgen. He was there. He was approachable. You felt, this is the perfect fit. Klopp's force of personality, he recounts, smashed through the barriers between work and private life. One day, I mentioned in passing to him that my mum would soon turn 90 and that she was still very sharp. Klopp replied, shouldn't I come and congratulate her? That would be a dream, of course, but I didn't take him seriously at first. I never mentioned it again. But a few weeks later, he asked me, tell me, isn't it her birthday soon? Please write down the address. I'll come and visit. And then he rang the doorbell. They had coffee and cake. And all the guests who came to the party couldn't believe that Klopp was sitting there, chatting with my mum. To him, it was the most natural thing. The pre-season started with a training camp in Donaueschingen, in the Black Forest, and a canoe ride down a river. That was the first thing we did. All get together and have a good time, Dortmund defender Nevin Subotic says. Kloppo's the kind of guy who leans over and flips somebody else's canoe. That's when the fun starts. You know, aha, this is not about him showing who's boss and us doing a serious race. I don't think Klopp ever thinks, how can I be funny? Comes naturally to him. Jürgen is a born entertainer. Straight away he had this huge presence, this aura and on Auschenegen, Watzke says. The team went with him immediately. They didn't have much choice, of course. He knew what he wanted. There was only one way for him, says Subotic. His strategy was basically to run the opponents into the ground. That's not for everyone, some thought. I just want to play. Give me the ball. Especially some of the older, more experienced players. They had their own views. Winning them over to such an intense way of playing was a challenge he mastered really well, I think. It was a new situation for him, because at Mainz he'd had a team that was put together to play his way. At Dortmund he had to find out who was with him and who wasn't. Sebastian Kiel, 28 at the time, was appointed captain by Klopp during the training camp. Kiel makes the point that getting the players to run in pre-season was only half the job. The new system, a radical departure from Borussia's methodical, possession-based game under Doll and Van Marwijk, needed not just more running, but a different way of thinking about football. Klopp worked tirelessly to implant his philosophy in our heads, Kiel says. I remember that he called me during my holidays to talk at length about his ideas and concepts. It was a completely new path we ventured on. Some smaller Bundesliga sides, notably Klopp's Mainz, had played such an extreme style before. But there was an unspoken consensus that better teams with more quality didn't have to work and think as hard. Tactics is bad for players, the former VfB Stuttgart and FC Bayern manager Felix Magath had memorably proclaimed a couple of years earlier. Klopp's brand of pressing and gegenpressing necessitated both strong theoretical underpinnings and a selfless attitude. The groundwork for the former was laid via many, many video sessions, Kiel. Some of the clips came from other leagues and clubs, including Barcelona, but the analysis centred on Dortmund's games. Klopp drew arrows on the screen, outlining where the players should be or move to overload the zone near the ball. Kiel. All of that was combined with incredibly intense work on the training pitch, with many stops, corrections, moving across. It's good to look at videos, but you have to feel it on the pitch. You have to get a sense for the right moment, begin to understand the game in a new way. You have to switch between attack and defence much quicker. You have to adapt to a different impulse in your head. These things won't happen overnight. A holding midfielder, Kiel was used to protecting the defence and calmly distributing the ball to players ahead of him. Effectively, he functioned as a human speed bump. But Klopp's way was the highway, autobahn football. Kiel's game had to change more than others to adjust to the acceleration all around him. Instead of instantly falling back into his own half as soon as Borussia lost the ball upfield, he and his teammates were asked to flood forward in an effort to win the ball back immediately. Other coaches said, "Let them have the ball in their own half. We'll only attack once they get close," Kiel says. Jürgen's instructions were to press and move up in unison if we lost the ball in their half, or if they turned their backs on us. We also laid traps on the pitch by not going for the first ball out and making sure the opponents played into an area where we wanted it to be. To the flanks, for example, where we could double up. That was the match plan, paired with a firm willingness to run and tolerate pain. Even if it looked stupid, that was one of his mottos. If the first guy pressed and missed, the next one had to be ready to join in. It was very, very wild running towards the ball. Wild was one of those words Klopp used. He wanted to make it a wild game, to pose problems for the opponents and to put them into difficult situations. Many players in the Bundesliga were used to calmly controlling the ball and then coming up with a good idea. With time and space, all players are good, but if you step on their toes as soon as they get the ball, even the best ones struggle. If you double or triple up on them, it's even more difficult. Subotic was used to the drill from two previous seasons under Klopp at Mainz, but at Dortmund, the coach had to go back to the basics. The team was much better, but the system was completely new for them. There were many sessions that really weren't much fun. Klopp explaining things while 20 guys are standing around, or tactical synchronized running, no fun at all. But it was important. In time, Zeljko Buvac got involved more and more. He's very silent outside the training ground. Nobody asks the assistant, do they? But he struck up a super relationship with the players. He played football with us as well. That earned him a lot of respect. The players saw, he can play. The same could soon be said of BVB's new defensive partnership of Subotic and Bayern Munich's loanee Mats Hummels, both 19. Dubbed Kinderregel by Bild, best translated as child lock. The two untried teenagers at Bundesliga level were picked ahead of the far more experienced Croatian international, Robert Kovac, to the astonishment of many experts. The makeup of the BVB defence became younger still when crowd favourite left-back Didi ruptured his cruciate ligament in the first game of the season, a 3-2 win at Bayer 04 Leverkusen. Klopp had described the Brazilian as the best player I've ever worked with, to a friend only 2 weeks earlier, and he was devastated. Fortunately, 21-year-old Marcel Schmelzer, a product of BVB's youth system, turned out to be a more than able replacement. He was a machine, Klopp told Flieger and Flieger in Echte Liebe. None of the four centre-backs in the squad were confirmed starters at the outset. That very much worked in my and Nevin's favour, says Hummels, who had been deemed surplus to requirements by the other Jürgen, Klinsmann, the new coach at FC Bayern. We quickly managed to put ourselves into contention, and Jürgen could see that we had good personalities. We were only 19, yes, but Klopp fully trusted us, perhaps because he saw that we were mentally a bit further on than your regular 19-year-olds, due to our backgrounds. Hummels had been a supremely confident star performer at academy level for Bayern, where Subotic's personal story was reflected by an air of determination and maturity. A child of Bosnian Serb refugees who had moved from the Black Forest to the US to avoid deportation. He had joined Mainz as a 17-year-old from the University of South Florida in the summer of 2006. He and FSV striker Connor Casey shared the same agent, Steve Kelly. Kelly had arranged for the teenager's successful trial. As a former defender, one might have to expect the coach to micromanage the young duo. But to Hummels' mild surprise, Klopp was open about his own limitations with his protégés. He said, "I've never played at your level, therefore I will never pretend to you that I know everything, but I will always try to help you." The obvious lack of experience in the back four, Hummels adds, was mitigated by a strategy that shifted a huge part of the defensive responsibilities 40 metres further forward onto the strikers and midfielders. The opponents were rarely able to play out the ball without pressure. That led to many long balls that lacked precision and direction. Those passes, played under duress, often went too far or out of touch. It was easier to play for us at the back. It was new, but hugely enjoyable. We were so young that we hadn't yet developed our own routine. We could totally devote ourselves to that way of playing. It all came down to the amount of pressure that could be applied against the ball, as Klopp would stress to his players over and over again. A tracksuit missionary preaching gospel to the tactically unbaptized. Not all ears were sympathetic to his dogma. Croatian striker Mladen Petric, the leading goalscorer of the previous season, 13 goals, and arguably the squad's most talented player, found it hard to accept the new regime. The day after the Leverkusen match, he was sold to Hamburger SV in a 5 million euro part exchange deal that brought one of Klopp's old Mainz favourites, Egyptian Mohamed Zidane, to the Signal Iduna Park. Klopp's move to get rid of the widely popular Petric was interpreted as a high-risk manoeuvre, a power play by a hard-nosed coach eager to lay down the law. But Watzke implies that there were firm financial and footballing reasons that made the transfer advisable from the club's perspective as well. "We all wanted it," he says, grimacing a little as the hotel lobby saxophonist shuffles closer to his sofa. Jürgen was keen to get Zidane in. That was key. And the offer from Hamburg was good. Petric and Alexander Frey didn't really fit well up front. Frey, a Swiss centre-forward and orthodox poacher, wasn't a natural Klopp player either, but Borussia felt that he could combine well enough with a more mercurial Zidane behind him. The partnership of Frey and Petric, the elegant shadow striker, would not have produced the required work rate. The strategy was to play all-action football with Gegenpressen, says Watzke. They were very good players, but not the right ones for that. Dortmund's high-pressing game worked even better as a consequence. You could quickly see that the team was more stable at the back. Watzke says about an encouraging start to the campaign that brought a win in the Super Cup against Bayern 2-1, a win at the DFB Pokal 3-1 versus RW Essen, and 7 points from the first three league games. Jürgen brought a defensive balance to the side, and the Gegenpressing was his trademark. Today, everyone's at it, more or less. Back then, you could see from the very first day that something was happening, but we honestly didn't think it would get that big. As destiny would have it, Klopp's fourth Bundesliga appointment with Dortmund was the most important game of the season. The Revier Derby at home to despised neighbours Schalke 04. The Blues, Dortmund supporters never use their rival's official name, were 3-0 up after 66 minutes. Borussia's young team looked totally out of their depth. Schalke's players were arrogantly strutting around the pitch in the knowledge that the fortress Signal in Duna Park had fallen. Kevin Kuranyi had nearly made it 4-0, hitting the crossbar with a header from close range. Klopp was horrified. "My wife Ulla sat in the sands and thought about packing our suitcases," he said later. But somehow the impossible happened. Riled by SO4's overconfidence, Subotic scored a goal that set fire to the stadium. Both the visitors and the referee's control over proceedings melted away in the furnace. Substitute Alex Frey scored from an offside position. In the 89th minute of the game, Dortmund were awarded an extremely dubious penalty. Klopp couldn't bear to watch. He turned his back to Frey, who calmly stepped up and converted. 3-3. Possibly one of the best derbies of all time, Frankfurter Rundschau cheered. An epic worthy of a 1,000-page novel, a resurrection. "If it stinks of sweat here, it's me," a relieved, exhausted, overwhelmed Klopp said in a press conference. "The game was so thrilling. I've seen wins that haven't felt this good." Dortmund's best start to a campaign in 5 years got the whole city excited. "Everywhere we went, people were giving us thumbs up. I'd never seen anything like it in 10 years in the job," says Schneck. "If you ask me how he managed to wake up the sleeping giant with a kiss and an attitude that chimed with the Ruhr area, that's him. He didn't go on a course. He didn't ask anyone how the people here were. He sensed it, instinctively, and behaved in a way that connected with him. He got them going. People kept asking, 'Are you sure you don't have any ancestors from here? A grandfather worked in the mines or in the steel factories?' They were certain he was one of them. No one could believe he hailed from the Black Forest, that he was Swabian. He himself didn't see himself that way. He always said, 'I knew very early on that I had to leave. I couldn't imagine myself sweeping the driveway to make sure my neighbour saw me and said, ah, good, he swept his driveway.' He never had that kind of small-minded attitude the Swabians are known for. It's his openness. He approaches people. My lord, in the beginning he fulfilled every supporter's wish. If somebody wanted him to go somewhere and say hello, he went there. I never felt as if he was doing that in a calculated way. He simply is that kind of guy. He likes people. I believe I once heard him say, a coach who doesn't love his players can't be a good coach. Bild pundit Mario Basler hailed Klopp as the white Barack Obama. Both had an excessive amount of intelligence and know-how, the former Bayern Munich midfielder wrote. Both are bearers of hope. Both are idols. At Dortmund, they're so fired up that him cleaning his glasses on the bench in a semi-competent manner brings out the cheers on the south stand. Klopp warned that he was not a messiah, only a coach, and that it was too early to contemplate Dortmund getting into the top third of the table. If we will be able to show commitment and readiness to battle for 90 minutes, something might grow here. His scepticism was vindicated, much more than he would have wished for, when Dortmund crashed to a 2-0 home defeat against Udinese in the first round of the UEFA Cup. They had qualified for the competition by reaching the DFB Pokal final under predecessor Thomas Doll. BVB's first game in Europe in 5 years revealed how far the young team, with their rough cast tactics, still had to travel to compete with the elite. The Italians, unfazed by the hurly-burly, coolly bypassed Dortmund's pressing game and hit them hard on the break. I've never seen a team I was involved with play this badly. It was embarrassing in parts, Klopp said, shaking his head in disgust. Too early and 4 substitutions, Zidane and Hummels both got injured, had only heightened the confusion. The hosts had been helpless, like a beached whale, Gazzetta dello Sport reported gleefully. Worst of all, the manner of the loss raised questions about the club's transfer policy. Is this squad, put together by sporting director Michael Zorc over the years, good enough to play top-level football in the long run, Zadoicha wondered. Those questions only got bigger in the wake of a 4-1 defeat against newly promoted Hoffenheim, the season's surprise title contenders. It was a drubbing, says Watzke. Ralf Rangnick's men were playing in a very similar style to Dortmund's, only much better. This was systematic football the way it should be, Klopp conceded. We need to get where they are now. Tactical behaviour is not like riding a bike, unfortunately. You have to practice again and again. Reprogramming the team's operating system simply took time, Subotic stresses. 3-3 or 5-5, it's quite easy. But during the game, you're tired, and you say to yourself, do I really have to press again? Then you press, and the guy simply lays off the ball because your teammate hasn't pressed with you, and it's all a waste. Getting used to that wasn't easy. It's mentally and physically very demanding. You're used to running 105 kilometers per game as a team. Suddenly, you're up to 115 kilometers, and the target was to hit 120 kilometers or more. Klopp knew that couldn't happen overnight. He knew everybody had played 20 years of football and had never been asked to work to such a plan before. More work and more time was the answer. If the early weeks were shaped by an Aufbruchstimmung, a sense of departure, to a glorious black and yellow future, Dortmund had suddenly arrived at a very unwanted destination in the autumn. This was crisis territory. A deeply troubling concoction of a leaky defence. A shooting gallery, Zadoicha sneered. A half-baked concept and a coach struggling to find his best starting 11. There were 6 changes in the lineup for Hoffenheim, and another 6 for the subsequent cup game against Hertha BSC that Klopp could not afford to lose. These are black days, a black week, he lamented. You can be the nicest guy as a manager, but everything depends on success, Schneck says, raising an eyebrow. Subotic hints that confidence in the dressing room in the new coach and his ways was fragile in that period. I knew him, I trusted him, he says. But for every team, it's really important to see that all the stuff the guy in front of you is going on about actually works. They might all really like him, but his methods working is the most important benchmark. He had to talk people round. It didn't all come off on one day, says Kiel. We had some difficult moments at the beginning thinking, how's that ever going to work? There were discussions. Nevertheless, he made it clear from the first minute that there was only his way of playing because he was absolutely convinced it was the right way. Against Berlin, raw luck came to Klopp's rescue. Dortmund scraped a 2-1 win in extra time, playing a slightly more defensive diamond in midfield to provide an extra layer of security. Next up, VfB Stuttgart were trounced 3-0 at the Mercedes-Benz Arena, with Borussia showing just how good their well-executed match plan could be. By now, the very last person in Dortmund should have realised they were on the right path, Watzke said, after the second leg against Udinese. His team had lost the match on penalties, having won 2-0 at the Stadio Friuli in regular time. But the quality and courage of the performance had made this a knockout of the inverse kind. It put the team firmly on their feet. Dortmund's progress under the new man in charge had become self-evident. Dismissed by some as merely a motivational coach, shadow boxing, jumping up and down on the touchline like a hyperactive 6-year-old at Disneyland on a sugar rush, Klopp showed that he couldn't just read a game, he could write one too. Klopp also won over the local press corps by intervening on their behalf in an altercation that night. Stewards in the stadium had blocked the journalists' access to the BVB players after the final whistle, while the Dortmund coach personally muscled in and cleared a path. One of the Italians cursed Klopp, shouting, "Cazzo!" at him. Polite translation, prick. But he just smiled and stood tall. "Not to worry, I don't speak Italian," he said. Dortmund went on to lose just once more before Christmas against Hamburger SV, a team that would inexplicably become Klopp's bête noir in the Bundesliga, and hibernated during the winter break in sixth spot ahead of Schalke. The improvement was real. "We all know that money gets you goals in football," says Norbert Dickel, perched on a wobbly plastic table outside a hole-in-the-wall cafe in Marbella in January 2017. Across the road, inside the red-brick Estadio Municipal de Marbella, Dortmund's first team is training this evening. "But we didn't have money then. It was a divine blessing to get Jürgen in. The team we had then started playing really well in that first year. We all saw that. The whole style of playing changed, leaving aside the fact that we underwent an incredible development in terms of our football. Jürgen also ensured that the popularity of the club rose beyond belief, simply because he was there, 24 hours a day, bringing people together. He never complained about the players being injured or sick. He'd say, 'We have enough good players.' He wasn't a moaner. He thought there was no point worrying about things you couldn't influence. We all sensed that things were moving forward, towards a point where you could believe in success. Lunchersmann. It was a transformation. We had seen plenty of games that had been rather unwatchable. Suddenly, these young guys were dashing about like hares going after every ball. They started combining, too, after a while. It was superb. All of us said, 'Oh, boy, this could turn into an era.' And it did. Into an unforgettable one. That's his doing." The first half of Klopp's debut Bundesliga season in North Rhine-Westphalia had BVB sitting pretty with 7 wins, 8 draws and 2 defeats. An almost identical record, 8 wins, 7 draws, 3 defeats, after the winter break, despite a serious ankle injury for Hummels and a poor start to the calendar year, steered the team towards the UEFA Cup qualification. Klopp's contract was prematurely extended until 2012. Not one person in the club was against Jürgen Klopp. Everybody supported the decision, Watzke declared that March. The team missed out on Europe, however, in classic, painfully dramatic Klopp style, in the last minute on the final day of the season. Fifth-placed Hamburger SV, 2-0 down to Eintracht Frankfurt after an hour, rallied to win 3-2, thanks to a Piotr Trukowski goal scored from an offside position. Dortmund, who had drawn their match 1-1 at the other Borussia from Mönchengladbach, were left empty-handed. Missing out on the 5 to 7 million euros the club could have made in the rebranded Europa League group stage left a hole in the budget. "There'll be a little less money," Klopp said after the frustration had receded. "But we've had some incredibly powerful experiences and have become much more of a unit with the fans. I'm hoping that some sponsors will say, 'Something's happening here. That's cool. We want to be part of that.' Everyone can jump on the bandwagon, but it's much more rewarding to be part of getting something started." On the whole, it was a great season, Watzke says. Unfortunately, the icing on the cake was missing. "The way it ended was a huge disappointment to all of us. We hadn't exactly been spoilt before. An improvement of 7 places was pretty good. There were other disappointments over the years, and they always brought us closer together. At the end of the day, it's a fact that the 3 of us, Jürgen, Michael Zorc and me, were an extraordinarily good fit. That was the key." Somewhere, half buried underneath the relentless, contagious positivity Klopp was projecting, there had also been anxiety and trepidation about a coach who'd only ever worked on German football's periphery. Too many managers had come and failed since the departure of Matthias Sammer in 2004. There was a bit of fear inside the club due to the recent history. "Please, not another failure," they said, says Subotic. "We managed to allay those fears in the first year. finishing sixth after coming 13th the season before was a success. We won games, we drew games, we also lost games, of course, but on the whole, you could see that the plan was working. We learned that we could trust him and each other. The whole club could take a deep breath, Keel agrees. It was palpable that the mood had changed completely, he says. But not everyone was deemed suitable to continue the journey. Swiss striker Alex Frey was offloaded to FC Basel for €4.25 million in the off-season. Dortmund spent all the money on bringing in a replacement, Argentinian striker Lucas the Panther Barrios, who would be happier to toil selflessly on the front line as Klopp's system demanded. Hummels' loan deal was made permanent in a €4.2 million deal that Bayern Munich would come to regret. Two more crucial signings cost almost nothing. All-rounders Sven Bender, 20, TSV 1860, €1.5 million, and Kevin Grosskreutz, 21, Arlen, free transfer, added youthful dynamism in the midfield. Munich-born Bender remembers Klopp phoning to sell Dortmund to him during that summer. I was in the car. The connection dropped four times, but he kept on trying. I knew that Dortmund were interested, but the moment a coach calls you and tells you why and how much they want you is really decisive. First of all, it was cool for me to speak to him. I only knew him from television, so to have him on the phone was very nice. He came across exactly like the guy on the box. The conversation was very pleasant. He told me about all the things he had encountered in his first year there, that Dortmund was a fantastic club, that he could wholeheartedly recommend to me and that I should do it. And he said he'd be brutally happy if I chose him as my coach and Borussia as my club. Of course I wanted in. Dortmund are a big club with a huge aura, and Klopp was the perfect man at the helm from the very start. Bender was even more impressed once he met his new coach in person. The guy was huge, astonishing. He didn't look that tall on TV. I had to do a double take. He was a superb motivator. As a young player, he really hit the spot for me. Klopp had a talent for hitting the spot with everyone, Lynchman says. He didn't have a routine in the dressing room before a game or a particular superstition, but away from home, he always looked for a quiet, secret place to have a smoke. That made him extremely likable in my eyes. He didn't pretend to be ascetic. He had the odd beer. He was unashamedly human, unlike many coaches who tried to hide anything others could perceive as a weakness. It was that human side of his, above everything else, that got the whole club going. At Dortmund, sporting director Michael Zorc and chief scout Sven Mislintat were responsible for finding player solutions in line with Dortmund's relatively narrow budget. A few Mainz players, Zidane, Subotic, Markus Fülner, who Klopp had personally put on the shopping list, excluded. There was little choice but to plump for exotic nobodies, such as Barrios, an unknown Polish striker Robert Lewandowski, who was signed from Lech Poznan in 2010. The €4.25 million outlay was so significant that Lewandowski was scouted about 30 times. Klopp himself travelled to Poland to cast an eye on the forward, disguising himself with a hoodie and a baseball cap. Empty coffers made playing the youth card a must. Fortunately for Dortmund, Klopp developed an appetite beyond coaching, as Subotic noted. He enjoyed building a new team. At Dortmund, he had a chance to change the squad almost from scratch, to put his vision in place. I think that really appealed to him. My guess is that it was similar at Liverpool. Klopp regularly proclaimed that his young side were hot like frying fat. But his second season started off rather lukewarm. Two heavy defeats at Hamburg, 1-4, and Bayern, 1-5. Three draws and a troublesome 1-0 home defeat in the derby against Schalke in the first seven games made for the club's worst start in 24 years. 1 month ahead of the club's 100th anniversary, the team had crashed to 15th place. The supporters got a little antsy, Watzke says. 100 angry ultras turned up at the training ground after the Schalke defeat, demanding answers from players and officials. Klopp defused the situation by engaging with the dissenters head-on. Schneck. He got out of the team bus and said, "Okay, tell me." They complained that the team hadn't fought enough, that they weren't true Borussia, that sort of thing. Jürgen explained to them over 15 or 20 minutes why that wasn't the case at all, and assured him that he took their concerns and ideas very seriously. They went home peacefully, thanking him for his time. That was no mean feat. Other coaches don't want anything to do with these types of situations. Klopp had a great knack for hitting the right note with supporters. He spoke their language, says Dickel. We had plenty of coaches who would say, "Today, our game between the lines, between the defence and midfield, and between midfield and attack, hadn't quite worked." Or, The transition game was a little off. Nobody wants to hear that in the Ruhr area. Jürgen said, we played some real crap today. That's why we deserve to lose. Everybody can live with that. The media were less easily placated. When Dortmund got knocked out of the DFB Pokal by 3rd Division VfL Osnabrück in November, Berliner Zeitung fundamentally questioned Klopp's ability to take Borussia forward. It's a regression, wrote the broadsheet. Klopp has impressively shown at FSV Mainz that he can make a small club bigger. Whether he can make a not-so-big club big again remains unclear. This season can already be seen as a lost one in that respect. The Dortmund coach professed himself disappointed about the sharp change in perception. Everything is a crisis these days. People's competence gets doubted far too quickly and promised improvement. We will pull ourselves out of it, I'm quite certain of that. Watzke maintains the club had no doubt that he would come good. 0.0. Klopp's aptitude for keeping the internal mood upbeat was vital at the time, says Bender. Some coaches take out their frustrations on players or lose faith in their own footballing principles. Not so Klopp. Naturally, he would tell somebody in no uncertain terms if they didn't run in the right direction or paused at the wrong moment, Bender says. But he never made a player feel that they were dead to him, that they had blown it. On the contrary, he always made sure that the player was given another chance if they wanted to take it. You could prove to him that you were still there, ready to step on the gas. The BVB boss, too, treated every game as a new chance to get things right. Dortmund's poor run in the autumn of 2009, he felt, was but an unavoidable byproduct of a very young side adapting to a system that needed full-blooded commitment and detailed execution to work. Growing pains. The answer was simple. More work. We held a brief training camp and told the boys they would be getting an extra 3 days off over the festive period if they, as a team, could cover more than 118 kilometres in each of those 10 games, he told the 442 years later. They didn't quite manage it, but Klopp granted them an extra holiday regardless. I did that because the extra effort the team put in immediately translated into more liveliness on the pitch. We were instantly more assertive, we created superiority in numbers, all the things you associate with additional effort. He would stand on the sidelines and shout his head off that we should push forward, says Subotic. As a player, especially as a defender, you're often thinking, safety first, let's stay back. He had to make a lot of adjustments during matches in those early days. It was still a completely new system for almost everybody. Hoffenheim had played that way, but only in the first half of 2008-2009. They couldn't keep it up. For us, it was a continuous process, and we couldn't look at any other team in the league as a role model for what we wanted to do. Dortmund had to set their own example. With each passing week, an absurdly youthful team, Süddeutsche Zeitung, often with an average age of less than 23 years old, got a little closer to reconciling high-tempo wildness with stability. By mid-December, they were in fifth place. Lucas Barras's goals, 19 in total, kept them in touch with the Champions League places in the new year, all the way to the penultimate game. 2009 champions VfL Wolfsburg, who had just lost their title to Louis van Gaal's Bayern, were the opponents on the day that ended in celebrations, leaving even the former Mainz coach Klopp flummoxed. I've never experienced such support in my life, he said, after the yellow wall and the rest of the stadium had saluted the team with chants and standing ovations that wouldn't stop. It was impossible to tell from the across-the-board exultation that Dortmund had only drawn the game 1-1. The result, coupled with Werder Bremen's 2-0 away win at Schalke, meant that they could no longer finish in the top three and qualify for European club football's most lucrative competition. But the supporters didn't care. Their joy had its source in neighbours Schalke's defeat, which ensured the Royal Blues would not, heaven forbid, win the league, and centred on fifth-place Dortmund's first direct qualification for the Europa League in 7 years. Germany's most passionate and most knowledgeable crowd were all too aware of how far the club had come in its first 2 seasons under Klopp, to bemoan them falling a couple of points short of Champions League access. Bombastic party, the team were hailed as if they'd pulled off the biggest coup imaginable, Frankfurter Allgemeine Zeitung reported incredulously. Ahead of Klopp's first day in office, Watzke and Zorc had given him a small winged rhinoceros figurine as a good luck charm. Devised as a mascot for the newly opened concert hall in 2002, the chimera had become a symbol for the city, the embodiment of its thick-skinned pride and aspirations. In May, the signal in Duna Park allowed itself to believe that this fantastical beast might actually fly. The BVB Rhino was pawing the ground, primed for takeoff. Chapter 8. Pump Up the Volume. Liverpool 2015-2016. It's a beautiful early summer's day in Liverpool, best enjoyed on the players' terraces that stretches the entire length of Liverpool's Melwood training complex, from Jurgen Klopp's multiple bay-windowed command centre on one corner past the dining hall to the other end, where the club nutritionist Mona Nemmer and Andreas Kornmeier, the head of fitness, have their glass-panelled offices. You'd never know from the lazy afternoon vibes, the silence of the deserted training pitch, and the laughter of Jordan Henderson on the next table, that Liverpool are due to play Southampton in a must-win game in 3 days, that the pressure is on to come forth. Adam Lallana, smiling and squinting in the sunlight like a tourist on the first day of his holiday, couldn't look much more relaxed if he was sipping a pink cocktail with a paper umbrella instead of bottled mineral water. The conversation is all about how hard it is to play Klopp's brand of football. But the England midfielder is not doing a good job of conveying his and the team's suffering. There's a simple reason for that. He finds the pain pleasurable. I was on international duty when Klopp was appointed on the 9th of October 2015, and I remember how I couldn't wait to get back, he says. I looked up his history and the way his team's played. I saw the word Gegenpressen everywhere. Gegenpressen style. Heavy metal style. Ever since day one, really, our first game against Tottenham, it was a very physically demanding game. But you embrace it. It's a challenge to become fitter. You get fit so you can do it. I look at Philippe Coutinho sometimes, and how hard he works. He wants the ball back, and he still has the ability and the strength to take a man on and put it in the top corner. Motion and motivation have the same Latin root. One cannot exist without the other. Klopp's very first message to the Liverpool supporters that they had to turn from doubters into believers was repeated to the players at Melwood ahead of the debut training session. He talked a lot about the team trusting itself, about belief, and not fearing any other team, Lallana says. He definitely had that confidence himself, that aura and belief that he is a top manager. He walked through the door and you could feel it. And I think that automatically filters through to his players. Before the German could have the players' legs, he would have to get into their heads. There was no point joining in the public lament about the team's poor defenders and general lack of quality in relation to the title contenders. Klopp had to work with the squad at his disposal and talk up its strengths instead. His trick was to stress the link between performance and effort rather than with ability. Lallana, he said, "Work hard for me. That's all he wants. He can handle mistakes. He can handle bad games. Work hard for me and give me everything." He's convinced that technical ability and quality will come out as a result. That is what the boss has done for me since the Tottenham game. 2 months into the 2015-16 season, there was no time to practice the new pressing style on the pitch, nor did the fixture list allow for additional fitness exercises. Klopp's notorious double training sessions, criticised as excessive and counterproductive by some pundits and experts, as the odd muscle injury beset the team after Christmas, never took place. The ad hoc introduction of pressing and Gegenpressing necessitated a firm collective commitment. "It's an agreement a team makes with itself," says coaching assistant and chief scout to Peter Krawitz, "a social contract. Yes, we want to do that together. One guy doing it by himself is nothing. He'll try once, he'll try again, but then I'll turn around and say, 'Where's everybody else? You guys kiss my ass if I'm running my socks off and you're sitting back there and enjoying the spectacle.' That's why you need an agreement that's binding for everybody. We will do it together. As soon as we lose the ball in the final third, we will try to win it back. There are a huge amount of advantages to doing that. You disrupt the opposition attack. You might catch out a team in the very moment they're preparing an attack and change their position accordingly. The left back might have started running up the pitch. You save energy that way too. If you track back to protect yourself from the counterattack with 8 men, then 8 men have to run a combined 80 metres, 640 in total. Or you play a proper Gegenpressing with the right trigger and the right intensity, then you run 5 or 10 quick metres with 3 or 4 players. That's why it's not so much a question of your legs, but of the mind. You have that moment where you have to overcome your inertia. Don't switch off. Don't be disappointed. The attack isn't over yet. It takes some work to drum that into players. There are special sessions and ways of training to make that happen. Video analysis. We showed the team, look, these guys are very compact. It's terribly difficult to get behind them, but winning the ball back from them is the one moment they're vulnerable. We tried to make that idea stick. Once you do that and do it orderly, you save yourself a lot of meters tracking back too. Lallana, who'd been exposed to a similar regime under Maurizio Pochettino at Southampton, reveals that concerted action comes with a feel-good factor that offsets any complaints. It is mentally very demanding, but when you have 10 other lads all operating like that, it's easy. You enjoy feeling that pain because everyone else is feeling it. You want to keep going for your mate. He's hurting and you're hurting, but it's all right. That's what the manager likes. That's what he is like. He celebrates tackles like goals sometimes because he knows it hurts. He adds that Klopp's tactics can't really accommodate dissidents and egotists who won't submit to the collective diktat. Maybe you can carry one player, but that's not how he wants to play. You can't operate like that. How difficult was it for Klopp and his staff to get his players to think and play that way? Klawitz considers the question for a moment. I believe that the team we encountered has been incredibly ready to take on things, he says. They were ready and willing to try something new. They knew that there were reasons why things hadn't worked out so well before and why we stood there now wearing red and black tracksuits. We felt it from day one. They want to understand what we're trying to get across to them. Complications didn't stem so much from a lack of willingness as they did from the initial language barrier. Tactics brain Jelko Buvac was reluctant to speak much English at first. Klopp translated for him. A lot of the time, mainly when he's angry, Klopp says. I fucking wish I could speak German to you, Lallana laughs. His English is tremendous, actually. I understand whatever he needs and wants to say. But it does frustrate him at times. I'm muddling through with my English at a low level and the team listen, Klopp said with classic self-deprecation, in an interview with German Focus magazine a month into his tenure. Everyone's cool at the club and eager to develop. We take time to do it properly. He was having so much fun and working so hard that he didn't quite have the time to appreciate his luck just yet, he revealed. It's passed us by a little bit, but of course there's been a moment where you think, it's so great being the coach of Liverpool. I never thought I'd be here one day. Nevertheless, it took a little while before cultural footballing differences were fully reconciled on the training pitch. The odd misunderstanding was inevitable. Klawitz says, everybody throws in their 20 years of footballing experience. You think you're all talking about the same things, but in the end, you realise they're two wholly different things. Pressing and tackling the way the coaching staff understood it expressly forbids fouling the opponent. A foul immediately renders your own ball-winning attempts futile. But during the very first tactical exercise, meant to be a light session, the Liverpool players flew into the challenges with abandon, believing that they had to interrupt the opposition build-up by any means necessary. Klopp had to stop them and tell them to slow down. Krawitz remembers the episode with a content smile. It was cool to see that the lads were absolutely ready to implement new ideas and immerse themselves in them completely. That made life a lot easier for us. Lallana says that the players responded to the manager's honesty. He can give you a bollocking, he can really praise you. The hugs, they are really genuine as well. He will tell you when he is happy with you. He will tell you when he is not happy with you. He is just genuine, straight up. He can't hide his emotions, can he? If he wants to say something, he will end up saying it. He says he can be your friend, but not your best friend, because he has to have those difficult conversations with you at times. Belgian striker Christian Benteke, for example, found the team's new direction a bit too tricky to adjust to. Klopp quickly realised that the 6'3" forward was not best suited to a high-energy pressing and a counter-pressing game. Divock Origi and former Hoffenheim forward Roberto Firmino as a false nine were preferred instead. The Klopp-Benteke partnership failed to get off the ground. The German had years ago decided for himself that there's no point explaining to players why they aren't being picked, that all he can do is tell them about the areas of their game that they can improve. But Benteke couldn't reconcile the coach's silent stance with his keenness to sign him for Borussia Dortmund a couple of years earlier. Klopp had met the former Aston Villa striker in a hotel in Germany, enthusiastically talked about the prospect of working together, and thrown in a few text messages subsequently for good measure. But the move had never materialised. Like his peers Antonio Conte and Jose Mourinho, Klopp is a voracious texter. On the day of Dortmund's Champions League final, no less, he sent a message to Kevin De Bruyne, then at Chelsea, expressing his excitement at the prospect of coaching the Belgian at Dortmund in 2013-14. The prospective move was eventually vetoed at the last minute by the Blues. Benteke, on as a substitute at Stamford Bridge, did score Liverpool's third goal to secure a 3-1 win over Chelsea. Klopp's first win in the league after two draws, 0-0 at Spurs and 1-1 versus Southampton. A frustrating 1-1 in this debut home game against Russian outfit Rubin Kazan in the Europa League and a League Cup win over Bournemouth 1-0. Beating Mourinho's champions in West London with a cleverly executed counter-attacking football served as a crucial marker of early progress. Maybe the wall-to-wall hype on sports television and in the back pages since Klopp's arrival on Merseyside was justified after all. "Can you win the league?" a reporter asked Klopp after the final whistle. "Are you crazy?" he barked back incredulously. "At first I thought I didn't understand the question. I've been here for 3 weeks. The last time Liverpool won an away game, I was still on holiday." Later, in a separate briefing in the tunnel, he was bombarded with questions about Liverpool's targets in the January transfer window and their chances of qualifying for the Champions League. They were eighth at this point. "I can't believe the impatience," he said. "They want to know whether I'll finish fourth." He shouted at referee Mark Clattenburg. "Welcome to England," he nodded. The flight of Klopp's private plane from Germany to Liverpool had been monitored on the internet by 35,500 Reds supporters, before the club had put him up in a boutique hotel on Hope Street ahead of his unveiling. The heavy symbolism was not accidental. In the minds of many fans, the Swabian wasn't so much the new coach, but a harbinger of dreams. The man who would shake the club out of its mid-table stupor and ring in a return to glorious days past. His appointment feels so instinctively right because the 48-year-old's extra-large personality will immediately cut through much of the befuddled silence that has befallen Anfield since the club almost won the championship in 2014 and ensure the volume is from now on turned all the way up, wrote The Guardian. Former Liverpool player Mark Lawrenson, not a man prone to emotional outbreaks, predicted that Klopp would bring back excitement to Anfield. With his oversized personality and 1,000-megawatt smile, he's box office, Lawrenson added during a break from doing a show for LFC.tv in a city centre high-rise. People hope that he will bring back the good times. That's already worth something. No other footballing country believes as much in the transformative powers of a manager as England, and Liverpool is the city that believes it most, thanks to Bill Shankly. The club's past greatness and a much more complicated present in which they've been forced to play catch-up with richer rivals and upstarts has created an unsteady climate, swinging wildly from overblown expectation to deep depression. Many prospective saviours have come and gone, unable to navigate the maelstrom of volatility. Klopp, dark jeans, black blazer, Chelsea boots, presented himself as a supremely relaxed football electrician at his unveiling, confident that a bit of rewiring could get the current flowing again, but also acknowledged the complexity of the overall challenge. "We must not carry 20 kilograms of history on our backs," he warned, "nor should the club bemoan its relative lack of funds. We should not think about money, only football. Amen." Liverpool's situation, he added, was not that bad. It's a good time to make changes, a restart. He promised full-throttle football, to cook up an emotional storm in the stadium, but was at pains to play down his own importance. He was neither an idiot nor a genius, a know-it-all or a dreamer. He ventured before landing the killer line. "I'm just a normal guy from the Black Forest. I'm the normal one." Cue laughter all round. It takes huge amounts of self-assurance to proclaim yourself ordinary in front of the world's media ahead of the first day in a big job. Süddeutsche Zeitung was reminded of the famous scene in Monty Python's Life of Brian, where the eponymous hero tries and fails to convince a crowd of disciples that he's wholly unworthy of their adulation. "Only the true Messiah denies his own divinity," one woman exclaims. Liverpool, not slow to recognise the marketing potential of a new man in charge, duly trademarked the normal one as a phrase and produced a range of official merchandise bearing the slogan. FSG president Mike Gordon says he was not surprised by the huge hype that greeted Klopp's appointment. "Jurgen Klopp and Liverpool FC really are a match made in heaven. The passion of our fans, the authenticity of our fans and our supporters, the way that they feel about our football and their intelligence as football fans meant that they understood right away that this was an extraordinary person to lead something that was so important to them. While I keep mentioning that the substance of Jürgen actually surpasses the style is still very compelling. We can all agree